In today's episode, we discuss the WWE draft. What is the point in this draft and the brand split? We might have to have a bit of a deep dive into it. We talk backlash with the upcoming PLE on its horizon as the superstars head over to France. And we talk AEW, Will Ospreay, where we thought later on this year he could be challenging for the world title. Maybe he's going to divert and go for the international title first. All this and more on today's episode of the WrestleManiac UK show. Let's go. What's up, people? It's your boy Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will, back again with another episode of the WrestleManiac UK show. Thank you very much for hitting the download button and plugging in, getting ready for this new week with all the big wrestling stories from the past week. Hope you're well. Hope you've got a really productive week ahead. Wishing you and sending you all the best positive energy possible. We just came out of a week of a fantastic wrestling show, AEW Dynasty, and you know, they've kind of started off their next stint, you know, as they head towards Double or Nothing. Some good TV during the week. That gauntlet match was incredible in terms of just like a new-ish match style, or putting a spin on an existing match style. I really did enjoy that. I thought they'd done a good job with that, and we're going to talk about who the winner was and the implications of him winning that match. And there's the ongoing stuff with Willow and Mercedes Moné, which it's a conversation that we're going to have soon. Not so much Willow. I think she's great. I think Mercedes is great too, but right now it's just not working. What they've got her doing, I don't think is working. It's not very AEW, more so WWE-ish, but you would think that they know her strengths, and yeah, it's left us in a very funny place. But I'm going to reserve my judgment and my talk on that for maybe another week or two. We'll see how things progress before I jump the gun and that. So the land of the elite, some good stuff is happening there, and I think it's going to be great to see GYV, the Grizzled Young Veterans. They are heading over there, it seems. They are debuting on Collision, or by the time you're going to listen to this, they have debuted on Collision. So looking forward to seeing what their run entails. And of course, in the WWE, well, even before we get there, there's been a load this past weekend, getting into the weekend, comments on Tony Khan saying that, you know, WWE is the Harvey Weinstein of professional wrestling. I mean, just when you think, you know, I've watched Tony Khan this past week sell, you know, very comedically, I would say, you know, his little injury angle, his stuff with the boxer and Jack Perry, and I thought that was great. And then you just think, oh yeah, this is just a guy that he's willing to do this for his company and this, that, and the other. And then he comes out and it's just like another just pointless take. Like, it's just, it's tiring, man. It's so tiring. It's boring. So yeah, I'm not speaking on it because I don't care about this stuff. Obviously, when it comes to serious offenses, like, you know, some of the legal issues going on between Vince McMahon and you know, all that stuff, which I'm not going to get into. I try to be sensitive. I obviously hope the victims are okay, and you know, I know there's a lot of trauma that goes along with it, but between all of this name calling and, you know, some of these cases around Vince and all of that kind of stuff, and even we're seeing rapid fire sale of shares between Vince and Nick Khan, bro, honestly, I'm here for the wrestling and nothing else. Nothing else. It'll be very rare when you hear me speak on anything of that level, or, you know, I'm here for wrestling, I'm here for booking decisions, I'm here for, you know, backstage drama that involves wrestling largely, but, you know, there's a realm of where backstage drama becomes just petty nonsense crap, which, like I'm saying, if you didn't know, if you couldn't tell by my content, I'm distancing myself from it. I have been, I always have, because I didn't come here for that, you get. And yeah, you know, I'm sure there's more places that are more informed, and they do a good job of covering that kind of stuff. It's just not what I come here for. It's just for the positivity, the love of wrestling. Saying all of that, we have a show today where we are commending WWE in some places, but really being, I wouldn't say negative, but ridiculing them, asking questions in other places. So, yeah, you guys, you know, like, share, subscribe, follow, do whatever you need to do. Leave a review on your podcast platform of choice. And let's get into this week's topics. The WWE draft. Yeah, let's talk about it. What's the point in it? And first and foremost, I would like to put my hand up and admit I'm an idiot. Every year I sit down and it's not like WrestleMania excitement, but I get myself excited for this draft. Thinking, believing, having faith, no matter who's at the helm, Vince, Mick Foley, Stephanie McMahon, Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon, Adam Pearce, Nick Aldis, Triple H. I can name them all and I've all given them a bit of faith thinking we're going to turn it around this year. The draft is going to mean something. And this WWE draft, this brand split, it don't mean jack. It don't mean anything. Like, and I need to stop lying to myself first and foremost. I'm a grown adult. You know, I think we let somebody kind of show you who they are and what they're capable of and you believe it. And in most instances, that's the case for me. I do believe it when I see it. But for this, I just keep giving the WWE draft a chance. It's disappointed again. It's really disappointed again. And I don't feel like it has any real meaning or implications at all. I was speaking to my guy Delboy, you know, Restfings. And he said, the draft is simply to introduce NXT talents to the main roster. And you know what? He's right. Because that is all that matters on the WWE draft. We have Carmelo Hayes, and I'm going to talk about Carmelo Hayes because he's brilliant. Carmelo Hayes is official. He is going to be a member of the SmackDown roster. We had Bron Breakker, who was recently called up. They made a big deal about him signing to SmackDown eventually. And now he's moved to Raw in the draft. Had a match on the night on SmackDown, but he's moved to Raw. A big signing, which they're trying to put off as a big signing, but I guess it's a surprise signing, a left field signing. Kiana James from NXT called up as well. Called up to the main roster. Now, big up all of those guys. I'm sure you know a nice little pay rise comes with that and stuff. So yeah, brilliant for them. But the meaning of this draft is so little. You know, they can't do too much because it's like they don't want to maybe upset and create imbalance. I think that's a major, major thing within this. Like, you move some people around, imbalances start appearing. Whether it's on SmackDown, whether it's on Raw, you'll make one division stronger than the other. You know, some show might have a great tag division, the other show's left with a rubbish one, and then a great women's division, and then a rubbish one on the other show. Like, this is the problem that sometimes the draft creates. And I'm watching this draft from this past week, and I'm just trying to wait for something exciting to happen. But more time, and they did say this when they were, you know, getting ready for the draft, it's as important to acquire new and top talents as it is to keep the top talents you have. And this has led us to a very unexciting, uneventful draft where more or less everyone is staying where they are because they already announced before, you know, during the week, I think they did, that champions are staying exactly where they are. And now it's just like, who's moving then to create any excitement? Ultimately, it's the champions, if anything, that you'd like to see move around a bit, because now you can create new challenges, new stories, new feuds. Roman Reigns, before the draft began, he's come out and he said, yeah, miss me with that. Like, I'm not involved. I don't want anything to do with this draft. And the reasoning was good because obviously he's not going to be on TV for some time. So it's like, there's no need to include me. But obviously, I can only imagine that's going to be a thing where he's a bit of a free transfer. He's above the draft. He's above the brands and he can go wherever he likes. And that will probably be exercised more so to see, okay, TV ratings, who's not doing well, SmackDown or Raw, let's stick Roman there. So, I mean, I get it. That's probably the only decision that really makes sense to me personally. And we see the likes of a Nia Jax move over from Raw to SmackDown, and I think, okay, she's not really doing much on Raw. They're clearly not going to make her champion anytime soon because they've had a couple of opportunities to do that. The one thing that excited me about Nia Jax moving over to SmackDown is that, ooh, she can join the Bloodline. She can join the Bloodline story. But, I mean, ultimately, I shouldn't be looking forward to a draft for something like that, I don't think. It's a weird one. I just feel like this is the last time that they're pulling the wool over my eyes. I think that goes with a brand split as well. Because now, I don't know if they're really going to keep to this brand split. In recent times before WrestleMania, people were going all over the place. Not just the top stars in the top stories, people were going all over the place. So, I don't understand what this draft is supposed to do. Again, this could just be a WWE thing, give it like a sports feel, a bit of a sports element and all of that kind of stuff. I will say the presentation of the draft was really good. It was fun. You know, the two GMs in their war rooms with several WWE Hall of Famers that, I don't know, they've called in to help them make decisions on the night. I don't know why they were there. But after the presentation and you peel it back and you look at it in the cold, you know, the cold light of day, this is just pointless. This just has no meaning. And yeah, a lot of people have said it. It's not like, you know, you watch Raw and you don't watch SmackDown, or you watch SmackDown, you don't watch Raw. This isn't like two football clubs that are opposing each other that you hate one. You know, as you're a fan of WWE, you watch everything, you know, no matter how you watch it, whether it's TV, whether it's YouTube clips, whether it's through Twitter clips, whether it's through illegal streams, you watch everything, you know, if you're invested. So it's weird to kind of try to pit them up against each other in this way, and then a brand split, and then it's like they just hop over shows all year long anyway. So like I said, this is the last time for me I'm gonna be overly invested. Derek was right. This is for NXT to really get their talent onto the main roster. And so far, that's another thing that I don't think has quite delivered. They said that talent can move to NXT as well. They've included NXT in the branding of the draft because the yellow's there. So, I mean, make it exciting at least. Let's see some people move to NXT. And yeah, I'm still here trying to book this to make this good. Just, I need to get over it. The brand split means absolutely nothing. The WWE draft means absolutely nothing. And look, just tell good stories with whomsoever you have on each of these shows, and I think we'll all be all right. There was a positive coming out of the brand split. There was at least one positive, in my opinion anyway. And that was Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes is the number one male pick for SmackDown, following Bianca Belair, who was picked number one overall in round one. Raw had their pick, and then Carmelo Hayes was picked. I think that's absolutely massive. Carmelo Hayes was picked before any other male roster member. Other people that moved in the draft on the night, LA Knight, AJ Styles, Randy Orton, look at the names I'm saying, and Carmelo Hayes was picked ahead of all of these people. And if I'm correct, I think they said this is like the highest ever NXT pick ever in a draft. Round one, the second pick of everybody for SmackDown brand. Yeah, man, that's massive. I think that's absolutely massive. I mean, firstly, again, I'll reiterate, this brand split draft stuff doesn't mean much, but I'm just... you know, quantifying it in the terms of kayfabe, and you know, in the terms of what message that sends. And like I'm saying, and you can see I'm excited, this sends a big message, in, you know, in my estimations, because to be picked ahead of any other male as well, like obviously Bianca Belair, absolute superstar, being the number one pick for SmackDown, full stop, is incredible. That is incredible, and that shouldn't be kind of taken, you know, with a pinch of salt sort of thing. But then for the next pick to be a male, and it's Carmelo Hayes above any other male that I previously mentioned that are absolutely, you know, stars, bona fide stars in this business, says a lot. It says to me that they're going to really try to maybe place Carmelo Hayes well, do something with him to really kind of, you know, boost his career, give him a push, and kind of see him as, you know, someone that they're going to invest a lot in. I think Carmelo Hayes is great. I've been watching him before NXT. Christian Casanova, done some great stuff on the indies. He's always been this guy. He's always been this kind of cocky, got the swagger and everything, you know, pulling the attention of everybody. Came to NXT, that continued. They spotted this guy was a star immediately. His NXT, you know, early days debut, I think it was pretty much, you know, the John Cena approaching Kurt Angle. Why do you think, you know, you can make a difference here? And John Cena says that I've got ruthless aggression and slaps Kurt Angle. It was that. And Carmelo Hayes has so much to offer, and he won it all in NXT, man. He won it all, apart from what, tag gold or something. This guy won every singles title open to him in NXT. So for the placement of the NXT career he's had, and now to give him this positioning in this WWE draft, I think is absolutely huge. And I do make the comparison to obviously the John Cena Kurt Angle situation, as well as, you know, Finn Balor. When Finn Balor was called up in 2016, I want to say, don't quote me on that, but I think it was 2016 when they done the draft and Finn Balor was called up. I think Finn Balor was one of the last picks of the last round, and everyone was elated in NXT. And that's another thing I'll just add. I love that little cut back to NXT and see how they are celebrating sort of thing, because this is a life dream for them. Even again, that this is done in kayfabe, who's going, who's moving, blah, blah, blah. Like, to have that reaction is just like, oh, like your peers are happy for you to kind of go up, as it was, to the main roster. So Carmelo Hayes had a round of applause from the NXT contingent, the NXT roster. And, you know, he came out on SmackDown. One of the very few people that was actually present came out during the draft. He gave us the usual bars, you know, when I shoot, I don't miss. And of course, Cody Rhodes was out there at the time calling names for SmackDown. And he said, you know, there's no better time. I'm going to shoot my shot now against you, Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes and Carmelo Hayes was the main event of that show. And this is what I mean, you know, I say John Cena, Kurt Angle, in terms of, you know, that John Cena debut. I'm talking Finn Balor, in the way Finn Balor was called up. This was akin to that sort of thing. This is really like, you know, we are christening him the next guy, or someone that we are very, very hot on. And we're going to put him in this position from day one. You know, yes, we've seen him on SmackDown and Raw before, wrestling matches and stuff like that. Carmelo Hayes, that is. But like, to now, you're officially on SmackDown, drafted, and you're going to go against the champion in the main event of SmackDown on your first night officially on the job. Yeah, man, that's big. It's big. I don't think there's any other way to frame it. Like, that is big. And I'm just looking forward to seeing, right, we've got this out of the way. Of course, he took a loss. I can't expect him to beat Cody Rhodes on night one as well. He's taken a loss, but now what do we do from here? I think we could get some really fun stuff here, man. I think something like the US title should be in his sights fairly soon. He might not win it, but at least like a contender. You know, I think he could be a really good contender. Once Logan Paul, he might drop it to a face, just so you're not doing like a heel versus heel dynamic, because it seems like Carmelo Hayes is going to be a heel. So Logan Paul might drop it to somebody, and then Carmelo Hayes enters the picture once he's kind of settled in, bedded in on SmackDown. I really think this could be good. I really think they've got something with him. I'm seeing some maybe similarities to the positioning they may want to use for him, looking at, you know, what Swerve Strickland has recently done in AEW. Carmelo Hayes is obviously the similarities, and not just being a black man, but being someone that traditionally doesn't maybe look so much like a pro wrestler, you know, a bit more smaller, diminutive in his figure, and in tune with the culture, in tune with the youth, and just someone that they can kind of latch on to. Carmelo Hayes is going to be somebody that they can trust going forward for years to come. Years to come. He's got so many years in him, and he's so smooth in the ring. Like, he's had a career, a long career, before he's even reached WWE, you know, them ones. So I just think, like, they know what they've got with him. They absolutely know what they've got with him, you know, post his match and all of that stuff. Or anyway, to be fair, it might have been before his match with Cody. He's got that picture backstage with Triple H, a little nice pointing picture. Like, they're laying out the foundations for someone that is going to be a big star. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Carmelo Hayes, you can go back, you know, watch some of his work in NXT, some of the stories and things he was involved in, some great matches with, obviously, Trick Williams as of late, some great matches with Bron Breakker, some great matches with Ilya Dragunov, the stories they told around all of that stuff. Like, we're seeing someone that they are bookmarking as, you know, a real star next gen. The same with Bron Breakker. I'll just throw Bron Breakker's name in here quickly, because Bron Breakker is someone, again, that apparently was not put on the same brand as Baron Corbin, who was later drafted to SmackDown. They put Bron Breakker on Raw to resist the temptation of the tag team. They want Bron Breakker to be a single star. So we're gonna see some good stuff from these NXT guys. And Carmelo Hayes, like I said, he's been ready for this kind of position. It's now time to strike and time to get it right with him, because for me, Carmelo Hayes is WWE's next big star. The first PLE post-WrestleMania, it is coming up this weekend. WWE Backlash emanating from Lyon, France. I love them taking these B pay-per-views overseas. Whether they're still doing it in like a 10, 15, 20,000 arena, or they do a stadium show, it just brings to life these pay-per-views, which, you know, traditionally we don't really care about. It's not the big four. But because they take it internationally, they take it to crowds that don't get live wrestling of this stature, WWE live wrestling, too often. Those crowds are rabid. Those crowds want it. They're so hot for it. And it really just makes the whole event, even the way they book it, it kind of just makes it feel so much more exciting, just because it's abroad. And we're going to see that, you know, Money in the Bank is in Toronto as well. We got Bash in Berlin, which is in Berlin, Germany. We've got Clash at the Castle, which is in Scotland. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to this and some of these other shows they've got. I'm still trying to get to Lyon. I think there could be a way, but I would love to be in the building, since, you know, France isn't too far. So we'll have to see. But what we're going to do is do some predictions for this show. So there are a lot of good, decent matches. The card isn't like overly exciting and maybe quite predictable in places, but we'll go through, we'll have a crack at it, and let's see how we do. So firstly, we have a women's tag match, and this is for the women's tag team titles. We've got the big three, but it's the big two amongst the big three, if you see what I mean. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair going up against the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane, who are the defending champions. Is it too easy to put the titles on Cargill and Belair, like, right now? Because it seems like it's inevitable. It seems like that's what they're going to do. Like, do we delay it? Do we need to delay it? I say they do it. I think they're going to do it, as long as Jade Cargill is staying on SmackDown, which I think she's going to do, because Bianca Belair has already been drafted to SmackDown. I think we are going to see Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill win these titles in France. And I think that will probably spell the end of Damage Control, maybe as a group. And they may get ripped apart in the draft. Who knows? Who knows? But I think that whether it's they're staying together, Damage Control, or the other team, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, I think it's done. I think it's time straight away. Kabuki Warriors aren't really bringing much else to the party. They were great as a tag team when it was them and, you know, Bayley and Sasha Banks back in the pandemic. I thought that was just a great feud between all those women involved. But this time round, not really feeling it. So give it to a big two of the big three, Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair. Let them become women's tag team champions. We've got a tag team match. The Bloodline Boys, Solo Sikoa, and the MFT, Tama Tonga. I'm still trying to figure out what MFT is. If you guys know, let me know. Hit me in the comments because I don't know what the MFT is. I don't know what it stands for. It sounds cool, but it could be one of them things we're all here saying, but it really means something that we shouldn't be saying. But yeah, the MFT, Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa, they're going after Kevin Owens and his backup, maybe his MFT, Randy Orton. Randy Orton stepped in this past week to give Kevin Owens a hand. So they're kind of continuing their relationship since before WrestleMania. And yeah, they're going up against Solo and Tama Tonga. I mean, Solo and Tama Tonga have looked great in this new kind of iteration of them both. Tama looking mega violent. And of course, this is how he's just come into WWE. And Solo Sikoa is looking like, you know, he's standing in for Roman Reigns as a tribal chief, looking real mob bossish. Like, it's fun stuff. And I think they're going to win. I think Solo and Tama Tonga get the win just to keep Tama Tonga looking really good. Maybe Tama Tonga gets a pin on Kevin Owens in this match. I'm looking forward to it. Like, I think it'll just be good. And I think it'll be cool to see Tama Tonga, like, in an actual match and not so much just keep scrapping people around the arena. WWE Women's Championship is on the line. Bayley is defending the title against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. I think we all saw this match coming from a long mile away. Like, Tiffany Stratton has been trying her hardest to insert herself. I was quite mad that they didn't just make Tiffany Stratton join the fray post her getting involved in Bayley and Naomi's match anyway. Doing the whole Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton thing again to see who should be number one contender, it's like, how does that make sense? Naomi won that match and Tiffany scrapped it. So if anything, they should have just banned Tiffany from ringside and ran the match again sort of thing on pay-per-view. But yeah, they got here in the end. And Tiffany Stratton has entered the fray. And look, I think Bayley's going to retain. It's just who's going to take the pinfall. It could be Naomi, and that could make Naomi quite irritable, especially because she's the one that has a relationship with Bayley. But Tiffany Stratton, I think they might preserve her. You don't want her taking too many losses. I think Tiffany Stratton is terrific. I think she's next up. I've spoken, you know, about the whole shooting someone straight to the top, almost in a Finn Balor-esque way, the way Finn Balor was brought up from NXT. I think Tiffany Stratton was definitely a contender for that. It doesn't seem like they're going to do it, which is fine with me also. But I think Tiffany Stratton is kind of in that position of just stay ready, stay ready, stay ready. Because at any moment, we might have to pull the trigger on somebody. And if we're being completely honest, she is one of the best people to pull the trigger with right now that you will be like, you know what? I believe it. I get it as well. So yeah, I think Tiffany Stratton has a lot to offer. There's a big like high side on her. But yeah, the title's staying with Bayley, and I think Naomi could get pinned here. Next up, the World Heavyweight Championship. Damian Priest versus Jey Uso. And I considered this week doing a little separate piece on this match. There's been a lot of talk on this match, how it's kind of looking hella mid-card-ish. And I hate to hear that. I hate to say it because, you know, I really do enjoy the men involved and, you know, their work and stuff like that. Jey Uso, I think I want to see him in the mid-card and win a mid-card title first before we ever really continue this whole stuff of him being main event Jey and, you know, participating in world title matches. I think he's hot with the crowd, but I think we do need to have like proof of concept first, if you see what I mean. And he has to win a mid-card title and we see how he does there before we dream of Jey Uso winning a world title. But there's potential. The road is there if they take it. Damian Priest, I was so hot on him when he won Money in the Bank. I said, yeah, this is correct. It's the right move. And I think the issue more than anything was Seth Rollins had a really long reign. It was a year long reign, basically. And Damian Priest became less hot and less hot and less hot as the year went on. They didn't maintain keeping him in a really hot position. And with the steam he was losing as the year went on, people started picking up steam like a Drew and a CM Punk and Rollins, and you know, it's just like you had the opportunity here and you maybe took a bit too long on that cash in for this particular person. And people are saying this feels mid-card. Listen, I think we just need to give it a go first. I 100% subscribe to what you guys are saying. I hear it, but let's just give it a go. And I think this is just, you know, the first month out of WrestleMania sort of thing. And we've got a draft in the way as well. Let everyone settle on the roster. Let, you know, Damian Priest, give him every, you know, tool to succeed with. And then we'll see how he does in a couple months' time. Because we've got a couple big shows coming up. There's a Berlin show where everyone expects Gunther to be in the title picture. There's a Scotland show where everyone expects Drew McIntyre to be in the picture. So we've got some programs, you know, there. If they take the opportunity, the question is, we need to just continue to build up this guy so that we can take the opportunity. Last but not least, the undisputed WWE Championship is on the line, which we can actually dispute because on this match card, there's actually another world title on the line as well. So I don't really know how undisputed Cody's title is, if I'm being completely honest with you, but Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles should be a banger. Should be a really, really good match. I'm looking forward to it. I hope Cody isn't hurt. Obviously, if you watch SmackDown this past week, his main event match with Carmelo Hayes, he took a bit of a bad fall when he tried something off the middle rope. I don't know what he was trying to do, but he took a bad fall. So I hope he's okay and it doesn't kind of prevent them from having a brilliant match here. But of course, Cody Rhodes is winning. Cody Rhodes ain't losing. Not here. Not to AJ Styles. Yeah, they've built up Cody. The stock is too high. There's nothing really more to say. It's a foregone conclusion, isn't it? And this match probably rumbles on. This feud probably rumbles on. And they go to Saudi Arabia, King of the Ring, and maybe run it back again, where Cody will win again. So I don't know what it looks like for AJ Styles, but yeah, Cody Rhodes written all over this. Like I said, this match card is pretty predictable if you ask me, but let me know, you know, hit me in the comments, hit me on the old X machine, and let me know if you differ with any of your opinions. But yeah, straightforward Backlash 2024, and I think it'll be a good show. I'm looking forward to it. So I wanted to come here again this week and speak about Will Ospreay. You guys heard me speak about him last week. I spoke about how I think at this point he's becoming the face of AEW. And we were pretty much speaking about the trajectory he's been on since arriving in the company and that he's going to be on probably going into the summer with that All In London show on the horizon. However, after TV this past week, it looks like he is entering the international championship picture. A bit of a diversion, maybe. So we're going to speak about, you know, why maybe this decision and just his general early days in, you know, the land of the elite as a proper sign-in. And with me at this time to talk all things Will Ospreay is probably someone I would call a connoisseur of his career at this point. I've got Charlie from Wrestle Furious here. Charlie, how you doing?
Hello, I'm good. I'm doing good. Excited to be here. I feel like I talk about Ospreay all the time, so it's a very fitting one for me to come on for.
Honestly, like, I think your opinion, I feel, is very valid. When you speak about Ospreay and other stuff within BritRest and people from BritRest, I listen because not only, you know, a lot of us see stuff and, you know, we catch some of the things because we go to some of the shows, but I feel like you are very almost religious in going to the shows and have done a lot of coverage for BritRest. So like, I take your word as gospel somewhat. So especially when it comes to Will Ospreay. So yeah, it was good to have you here. And I guess jump into our favorite topic. So to get started, you know, what's just your general thought since Will Ospreay came to AEW, His first match being at the Revolution pay-per-view in, you know, early this year. What's been your thoughts of how, and you flew out to go, that's the night that Sting retired. What's just been your thoughts since he's come in the door, like just how he's been treated, the fan reaction, you know, just let me know where you think that's how things are going for Will.
Yeah, so I said I was at Revolution for his first match with Takeshita. I was actually at Full Gear as well when they debuted his sign-in. So I've kind of seen like a few of his key moments in AEW so far. But the fan reception is something that genuinely surprised me because we know Will Ospreay and we know how great Will Ospreay is. But I didn't expect the American fans to like click with him as quickly as they have. Like I had no doubt that he would get over like incredibly fast, but literally from day one of having any sort of like association with AEW, like even back when they were doing the Trios tournament last in 2022 and Forbidden Door and all that, he's just connected with the crowd in a way that like a lot of new wrestlers coming into the company doesn't. And I think AEW have done an incredible job of just letting Will be himself and getting over as Will Ospreay rather than just like this new shiny toy in the company, which I feel like they've struggled with sometimes in the past. But yeah, Ospreay's been doing an incredible job, and like the reactions he gets from the live crowds is like in random places in America. Like it's not just the pay-per-view, it's just like every week on TV. Like they all know how to do the bit in the theme song already. It's crazy. But I'm so happy for him, man, because he's worked hard to get there, and AEW seem to understand what they have in Will Ospreay, which is good.
Yeah, likewise. I couldn't be happier that, you know, such a genuine and hardworking person has got here. And, you know, we know AEW, the core audience are people that would have watched him maybe in New Japan. They know some of his stuff. He's a fantastic worker. He's a fantastic worker. He's in a company that primarily cares about work and what you do between those rings and those ropes. So I think he's definitely found himself in the right place. What I think is more surprising to everyone, definitely WWE, who would have had their name in the hat trying to sign him allegedly, is it's that charismatic nature. It's the ability to, you know, take control of the crowd every time he's on the mic and the energy that he comes with. And I definitely think this is what WWE, they missed a complete trick on, because they thought maybe they were just getting a quote unquote pro wrestler that, you know, they probably have to teach how to talk and this, that, and the other. And maybe they just thought for the money he wanted or rumored to want, we don't want to have to teach someone all of that. They didn't know that they were getting pretty much a finished article, in my opinion. So, I don't know what you think, but I definitely think they slept on the job in terms of signing Will Ospreay.
No, I agree 100%. Like, even coming into AEW, I didn't think that his promos would be as good as they have been so far. But he, like I said, he genuinely just connects with the audience so well. And he doesn't filter himself in the way that he speaks. He swears less, because of course he does. He's on weekly TV now. But, like, he's not changed who he was, like, from, like, previous companies or some or anything like that. And WWE really missed the mark on that. That, like, obviously, that it was reported that they had like different terms and he didn't want to move out to the US. And I guess if that doesn't fit the schedule, then you have to make hard decisions. But for someone like Ospreay that's gotten over the way he has already in AEW, they've missed a trick with it. Like, I thought they should have been willing to meet some of his terms on things like that, because he's so young still as well. He's like, what, 30, 31? He's only going to get better at all of these things. So it's crazy. It is crazy to me that they willingly passed it up, it seems.
Yeah, their loss is definitely AEW's gain. You know, AEW would have been probably the correct home for him regardless, even if WWE really did want him. But now, you know, we've seen the jibes and the stuff back and forth between the two involving Ospreay. It's more or less just shows me like, you know, you've missed a trick here. So let's take a little jab at him sort of thing, which is very surprising. But I'm happy at where he is, and I'm happy he's happy and that the deal, you know, currently works for him. And with him coming to AEW and the trajectory he's been on, you know, we were probably all saying, right, Wembley main event, world title, Ospreay versus whomsoever. At the time of recording, it's Swerve Strickland, and we probably thought that's, you know, some have gone as far as saying that that might have been part of the deal he signed, that, you know, he's got to be at Wembley in that main event. But like I said, as of TV, we've seen him win this very creative gauntlet match, which I did enjoy this past week. And again, just star power. I don't know how you felt watching it. In fact, I'll ask you that first, because I was watching it and it was just plodding along and I was trying to even understand how this match works, sort of thing. But then Ospreay's music hit and you felt the energy in the crowd and it's like business has just picked up. What did you feel like when Ospreay entered this match where we knew it was for the number one contendership for the international title?
Like, as the match was going on, I thought it was really cool that they really lent into the whole, like, international bit of it. Like, they had, like, Jay White, Kyle O'Reilly, Commander, I'm forgetting other names, but there was, like, some cool talent in this match. And not as much as I love a lot of the AEW roster, when it comes to, like, battle royals and things like this, they have a couple of set pieces they go to usually. And they didn't in this match. They really, like, included, like, a high caliber of talent. And Ospreay's music hitting in Daly's place was a crazy reaction. Like, it was real cool seeing him there. But I actually really liked this match, and I think that they should keep it exclusively for the international belt and go even further with the bit. Have people from other companies and freelancers coming in for it. Because AEW is the place that feels like anywhere anyone can show up. So lean into it. Run it a couple of times of the year, like around Forbidden Door season and All In season. And I think it could be a lot of fun for TV. But Ospreay being in that match, I was just like, oh shit. So this is what they're doing then. Because as soon as his music hit, I was just like, well, he's winning because it's Ospreay.
So this is it. Like, he entered and I'm thinking, well, like I said, in my head, this isn't the plan. He's not meant to win this belt. So he can't be winning. Are we pinning Ospreay here? Or because of how the match goes, he's just not involved in the finish? Are they just going to have two other people want someone go over someone else? But I just thought they put him in there to grab the attention and everything. But like you say, he won the match. And now he's the number one contender for the international title, going up against Roderick Strong at Double or Nothing. Totally ripping up, I guess, the scripts that we probably all had in our minds this early on. What do you think about that decision to kind of course correct? Did I say course correct or just divert his attention at the very least to this title?
I have a theory that Ospreay just really misses work in the indies and they've just given him the international belt so he can go do that sort of thing because it works for a wrestler like Ospreay. But I was really surprised that the direction wasn't him and Swerve at All In, because that's what I've had in my head for the better part of like 4 months, that those two are going to be the main event of All In. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if they don't go that way, because Ospreay's just signed a deal. He's going to be there for the next couple of years. It seems like All In's going to be a yearly event. Like, it doesn't look like he's main event in this year, but he'll probably main event in next year, which I can wait another year for an Ospreay main event. It doesn't really bother me that much, but I was surprised. But it also does make me happy that AEW aren't taking these new wrestlers and immediately slotting them into the roles that we think that they should have, and that they're like doing different things with them. It's the same with Okada. He didn't immediately go into the world title scene. He's doing stuff with the Continental belt. So Ospreay doing stuff with the International belt, it fits his character. It fits who he is as a wrestler. So I don't hate it. And him wrestling Roderick Strong is just a crazy match that I didn't think we'd get, like, in his AEW run, like, this early on and, like, this randomly. So I'm very excited for this. I think it could be special.
I think that match is going to be delicious. Like, I watched Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly the other day at that for Dynasty, and I thought, Roderick Strong is an alien. Like,
yes.
He's not, you know, who everyone wants as like superstar wise. Yeah, he doesn't maybe speak the best and isn't that captivating, but when it's in the ring, like
when that bell
he's
rings,
just different. Yeah, literally, like it's just a switch goes off, as they say, and he's just different. You mentioned them not kind of hot-shotting their new talents to the top titles. Like you said, Okada finds himself in the continental scene, Ospreay now international title, even Mercedes looks like she's got business TBS. With a TBS title as well. Do you think it's important for them to kind of do that to strengthen these other areas of the card, or just so that fans don't kind of say, well, you're leaning in on these talents too much and putting them in these top positions too quickly?
I think it's a little bit of both, because like the AEW mid-card scene, it like ebbs and waves a lot. Like sometimes they struggle to have like a really decent mid-card scene, But like, come Double or Nothing, the mid-card title holders are going to be Okada, potentially Ospreay, and Adam Copeland, which is a lineup I never thought that I would see. Yeah. Like, it really is weird. And then you add Mercedes into that as well, holding the TBS belt if she wins. Like, so I think they're putting a lot of work into establishing their mid-card and making it feel as important as other titles on, like, as important as a world title as well, because they have such a high caliber of roster that not everyone can always be in the world title scene. So they're kind of like giving their fans a chance to get used to that. And like, maybe you're going to see these cool guys not doing what you necessarily expected, but it's just as important. And I feel like that's the sort of thing they're kind of build up right now.
Yeah, that's true. You mentioned, obviously, if Ospreay is to win, he'll be international champion. So firstly, we'll go with the Double or Nothing prediction. You think he's beaten Roderick Strong?
I think that is probably what's going to happen, unless the Don Callis family turn on him there, which is the only way I can see that him losing, really. I can't see him taking a clean loss at the moment. No offense to Roderick Strong, because I think Roderick Strong's great, but I don't know. It does feel like they're setting up Ospreay to be the international champion for the next couple of months.
Okay, so I guess we do have the factor of the Don Callis family, and that story is happening in the background about, you know, is Will going to kind of side with them and all the nonsense they're doing. I guess Undisputed Kingdom are full strength again, so they could possibly factor in the decision of that match. Because of, you know, the prophecy of the Undisputed Kingdom, that's why I thought, well, Roderick Strong can't lose here, surely. Mm-hmm. So, like you're saying, maybe there is some shenanigans that play into it. Didn't Ospreay, and I ask you this because you might know and remember, didn't Ospreay say after he signed that he's going to like stick in AEW at least for the next year before maybe he starts going out and doing indies and New Japan again? Am I making that up, or did he say something like that?
He said that he is going to be focusing mainly on AEW. I think it was for like the year. But then he popped up in a Chicago indie the other day and reffed a match between Sky Blue and Carl Fletcher. So he misses the atmosphere. It's so clear that he's just I don't want to say he's an indie guy through and through, because that sounds like an insult, but he loves the indies so much. And it's so clear because of how long he spent doing them.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%. It's in his bones. It's in his DNA. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, why wouldn't he love it? So, okay, definitely. And to be honest, if he took the international title on the road with him, defended it in other places, I guess that is still AEW business somewhat. Yeah. As opposed to just doing random indies just to, you know, get your fix, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say Strong does lose. Just a little side mission here. What do you care about the Undisputed Kingdom, in fact? Because I know a lot of fans are here and there with them.
Not really. It's not really a faction that I care about. Like, I used to love Adam Cole, but his AEW run hasn't really been that inspiring, to be honest.
It's stank, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been quite... And it's not all his fault. He has had, like, some really heinous injuries. Yeah. Like, he's had some shit luck, but... Mm. And I think Roderick Strong's an incredible wrestler, but him being like the mic guy of this faction has been very, very funny. And I don't know, with it coming out that Max has had to have surgery, it's not like he's coming back anytime soon. So yeah. I don't, what do the Undisputed Kingdom do at the moment? Like, unless they end up feuding with the Don Callis family, which
isn't
like... It's not really that inspired. I don't know. It's a struggle. It is a struggle.
Yeah, no one wants that. Undisputed Kingdom, Adam Cole, especially, like you said, he's been so unlucky. Like, the minute he signed for AEW, I just thought, oh my God, he's just going to run away with it now. Off the back of all the great stuff he done in NXT with Undisputed Era and stuff, I thought, yeah, this is brilliant. But just hasn't worked out that way. Hasn't worked out that way at all. With... Ospreay then. So if we're ready to kind of wait for him with this AEW world title and maybe this big win in Wembley, is there anything else you'd want to kind of see him do and achieve before maybe the world title comes along?
I think that he's going to end up playing a big part in this, the Elite versus AEW storyline that's kind of like brewing at the moment, because of like the way he is and the way that he's embraced the company. I feel like he's just going to naturally fall onto Team AEW. So I was talking to a friend about this, and when Kenny Omega's back, if they want to tag against the Young Bucks, I ain't gonna say no. That's the sort of thing that I can kind of see him doing. And he's gonna go through this split with the Don Callis family. He's gonna end up just doing a bunch of little side missions, I think, in AEW for a little while, and then circling back to the world title scene in like, I don't know, 6-8 months, I guess. Like, he might not even win the title at All In. He might win it before next year. Like, we don't know. But yeah, I can see him not being in the world title scene as soon as we fall.
I mean, Omega coming back is its own separate thing. I'm so happy to kind of be getting him back, and that, you know, this illness, injury that's kept him out so far isn't kind of any longer. I do wish they kind of kept it as a surprise for this upcoming week, because the fact that they've already, I think they said that on Collision last night, that Tony Khan's not going to be around because of the injury.
Yes.
And I know it's, you know, announce it so we can get people through the door and all of that kind of stuff and put bums in seats. But I just feel like we're missing a trick. If the Bucks came out on Dynamite next week to kind of gloat, you know, look what we've done to TK and put over Jungle Boy and all of that kind of stuff, and Omega's music hit in Winnipeg, I just think that would have been like incredible. And I think it's going to be great anyway, but
yeah,
the surprise element that he's back, I just think that, oh, should we have announced this or just left it to surprise?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it all depends on whether he's actually cleared or not. If he's like genuinely cleared and like ready to get back in the ring, I would have left it as a surprise. But with the way that they've announced it, I don't think that he's actually cleared yet. And he's going to be doing more of a GM role and kind of stepping in for Tony Khan, because like he's the last EVP left that's like not corrupt or whatever. So I think they're going to play into that sort of storyline, because he said in his Twitch streams that he's probably going to have to get surgery. So when they announced him, I was just like, okay, so why are you on the road then? Like, so yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, you've put Ospreay and Omega on the same team into the atmosphere now, so I'm feeling we need to see that, because that would be great. Lastly, I just wanted to touch on Swerve with Omega, and obviously with Swerve and Ospreay with Ospreay going on to do this international title stuff, do you think it's kind of partly to take the pressure of Swerve? Like, we need to do something with Swerve now so that people aren't calling for Ospreay to become champion. Do you think there's anything of that in mind? Because I guess a lot of people have been looking at it as if, you know, there's this kind of ticking time bomb where Swerve has about 4 months before we get All In Wembley, where Ospreay's going to take the crown. But with kind of diverting Ospreay's attention, it's like, Swerve, just crack on and do what you need to do as champion. Do you think there's an element of that, or do you just think it's how they plan to book Ospreay from the beginning?
I think there might be a bit of an element of it because of AWC, the chatter from fans online. Like, they're very aware of how their fan base feel about things, unless it's Jericho. but I think it plays more into the fact that Swerve still has this storyline with Hangman that hasn't been concluded, because Hangman hasn't been seen since Revolution. So I'm kind of on the thought track that that's now going to be the All-In main event, and probably might have been the All-In main event they had planned all along. So it could still be a case of Swerve's only going to have the belt for 4 months, but it's not the guy we think that's going to be taking it. So maybe that's why they've gone straight into this international title storyline with Ospreay, to kind of get fans away from that idea. So there's like less pushback against it, I guess. But I don't think people are going to be upset either way, because of Swerve is an incredible world champion already, like just the work he's already putting in. And as long as they keep like booking him to this caliber for the next 4 months, 4 months isn't a transitional title reign. People are just really used to long title reigns now, which is a bit of a detriment to how they can book world champions at the moment in the big companies. But I think that maybe Ospreay was never planned for the world title scene this early on, and fans just love him so much, that's what they assumed would happen.
Yeah. I, like I said, I think this is smart, the way they've kind of diverted him. I was saying on the Wrestling's podcast the other day, I've noticed how they've kind of stopped visually showing the rankings.
Yes.
Because if Ospreay's going to keep winning, people are going to be like, well, why isn't he going for the world title? But exactly. At least now they've put him into a title picture, albeit not the world title one. So, yeah, I think that's cool. And yeah, finally, when do you think this Don Callis stuff with Ospreay is going to end?
When's it going to end? Oh my gosh. I think it will culminate somewhere between Double or Nothing and Forbidden Door. Unless they use Forbidden Door as a way to extend it, I don't know. Because if there's such a weird, not a weird gap, but like there's such a small period between Double or Nothing and Forbidden Door, it's like we've got to think about tying AEW and New Japan storylines together. Yeah. So like to make sense for the build of the pay-per-view. So I guess somewhere in that period, and it honestly might not even, because if the rest of the Don Callis family fall on Team Elite, then it's going to keep bouncing off because of that. And I guess it will culminate whenever that culminates, which who knows, this could be the feud of the year for AEW. It could go until like the end of the year. So I genuinely don't know where it will end at this point. There's like a few different places it could, but it depends how they book it, I guess.
That's got to be a blood and guts match, the Elite versus AEW.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Charlie, it's been a pleasure as always. Please tell the people where they can find you and stuff.
You guys can find me on the Wrestle Purist channel. I do a Sunday podcast called Girls on Grabs, where it's just a couple of girls talking about grabs. We cover a bunch of different topics, mainly AEW, because of that's what we talk about most. And then on a Thursday on the Wrestle Purist channel, you can catch me on the Dynamite review as well.
Nice. Thank you, Charlie. Speak soon.
Thanks for having me.
Big shout out to Charlie for joining me on today's episode. It's good to chat with Ospreay, man, with I know someone that's been watching Will from early. So, you know, the opinions are from a place of research and just knowing what the guy is about. He's one of the greats, man. He's gonna be an absolute star, like in this industry, like in the next 5 to 10 years. He's done so much hard work to get to this place, so to see him now kind of get his flowers on this big stage, biggest stage he's been on consistently, like it is so deserved. So yeah, thank you again to Charlie for joining me to talk about Will Ospreay. Cool guys, I think that's everything, that's all the business for this week. Next week, we'll obviously be talking about some of the fallout from Backlash coming from Lyon, France. I'm still trying to see if I can get over there. It'll be great if something materializes. But yeah, I'll keep you posted. Keep posted on the socials, WrestleManiac UK, on X, Instagram, TikTok, all of those places, YouTube, of course. And appreciate you guys for downloading the podcast today and listening. Like I say, share, let other people know about it. I would appreciate that. WrestleManiac UK signing out, and I'll see you soon.